Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting today will be David Hulley and Mike O'Connor. In this episode, we will be discussing the insane 4-3 victory for Fulham at Craven Cottage on Saturday. We'll go through all the key moments of this match, along with rating the players, the Fulham manager, Middlesbrough, and the ref as well. We'll also be sharing who we thought was the man of the match for Fulham. Before we do anything, I have to say hello to my co-hosts. Looks like one is on the line with me right now. David, how you doing?
Hiya, Russ. Good to be back, and it's nice to be able to talk about a win again, isn't it? You know, and it was a mad day yesterday at the cottage for anyone who was there, and obviously anyone who saw it as well. Definitely a game of two halves, I think you'd say, really. A very kind of pretty quiet and uneventful full first half, really, of very few opportunities, and then second half, quite open end-to-end football. So, yeah, looking forward to going through it all with you and Mike.
I look forward to that. And unfortunately, as I mentioned to you offline before we went live, Giannis Gineas hoped to be able to join us today, but he had a scheduling issue that came up at the last minute for his team, and unfortunately Giannis could not join us, but he told me he will be listening later. And Giannis, I want to first of all thank him, and I'm going to be thanking Mike when he comes on, for the wonderful job he did last Sunday with serious problems with technical difficulties, and he did a wonderful job. So Giannis, if you're listening, thank you. And now I'm going to bring on Mike, who was also on that show. Mr. O'Connor, how you doing?
Not too bad, Russ. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing well. First of all, like I just mentioned with Giannis, I want to personally thank you for the wonderful job you did last Sunday.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a blast. I had a great time. I know Giannis had a good time, and we made it through those technical difficulties, and I'm ready to come at it again this weekend.
Yeah, listen, I'm glad that you could join us for this show, and we could go through this match. And, you know, you and I watched this online, and David was there, and we certainly have plenty, and I mean plenty, to get through. David mentioned it was a tale of two halves. He couldn't be more right about that. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you, and then I'll go back over to David. Let's just talk about your opening thoughts of what you watched yesterday.
In the first half, what I watched was a Fulham team that, honestly, they played probably some of the best football we've seen in weeks. We've been playing recently a lot of scrappy end-to-end long ball tactics, and I think Kit kind of went back to his diamond formation, throwing Rodallega back in there and tried to do some more free-flowing football, which I really enjoyed watching. And I think, you know, in the first half, we were definitely the most dominant team. We deserved to go ahead. I think Michael Turner's goal was a very nice touch to the end of the first half, where we definitely could have been ahead multiple times. And then in the second half, we just kind of sat back and we rested on our laurels, and we've seen that too much this season, and we saw it yet again. And the fact that we slipped from a 3-1 lead against 10 men kind of just shows you the trouble that we've been having this whole season, and shows our inconsistency. But luckily enough effort and enough drive and fight was in our team to not give up even 5 minutes into the added time, and one suicidal mistake by Middlesbrough, and we came out the winners. So it was a great game to watch. It was very exciting, and although not the best from a Fulham supporter's point of view in the second half, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too, Mike, and I'm glad that you mentioned being up 3-1 and giving up that lead, and because, again, that came to my mind, you know, when Middlesbrough came all the way back, and I'm thinking, okay, this is kind of what a struggling team does. They give up two goals,
yeah.
Especially against 10 men, which is even worse. But, you know, it kind of just is part of the season. You know, what giving up that lead just goes with the rest of the season. But in the end, Fulham get the victory. It was an insane match. David, you were there, so just share with me your opening thoughts of what you watched in person.
I thought it was a pretty quiet first half. I take Mike's point that it was the best football we played for weeks. I wouldn't say we played great football, but it was an improvement on what we've seen of late. But it was a game of so few opportunities, because, or a half, I should say, There were only two actual opportunities in the half to score, I think, and both of them fell to Fulham. Saying that, there was a free kick, obviously, for Borough. But
right.
I think the ball was going over anyway. It had a very, very slight touch from Bettinelli. But we had only two shots on target. One that Hugo, I think, maybe could have buried or should have buried. Maybe it was a bit stuck under his feet. And, of course, the goal we scored. And what better time to score with actually what was the last kick of the game, or the last head of the half, I should say, because there wasn't even time to restart the match after that. So fantastic from our point of view. So we looked solid, but I think it was down also to Middlesbrough. They never got flowing. We didn't see from them what you'd expect to see. I think they were struggling to find the rhythm as well. So we got there, and it was, the lineup. There was a few sort of moans about the lineup, myself included, beforehand. I know Mike wasn't happy because Grimmer wasn't playing, but I later found out that he'd been fouled by Bodaroff in training and they'd both injured themselves, so neither of them were available. So there was no choice, really, but to start Ashley Richard somewhere. And I think, as I said on Friday, I had a feeling they might start him at left-back, actually, because he would rate him more than Kavanagh at left-back at the moment, and that was the case. So we were certainly more solid, but I have to say the first half wasn't really entertaining at all, only from maybe a purist point of view that the quality was better than it had been. Obviously, second half was just a completely different game. Borough came out with more purpose, and then when they obviously, got behind, they made a very bold move, making all three substitutions in one go.
Yeah, we're going to talk about
that. That really spurred them on. And I was annoyed because I saw them coming back into the game all the time and Kit did nothing. And that's what I was getting frustrated with, that because I thought Kit needed to be proactive as well and deal with it. And it was only when Danny Guthrie was very lucky not to be given a second yellow card that Kit realised they had to pull him off and he put Fofana on. But it wasn't a proactive move. It was just, collateral damage or something to avoid sending off. And then we had the strange one of Ruiz coming off, who had been playing cam, replaced by Corley, who went right midfield. And although it was end-to-end stuff and we took, we got the penalties, we did miss a few opportunities, and Borough got back into the game. And it was only really, there was a bit of luck in there. I think the first penalty was fortunate, although there was another shout just before that, I thought, should have been a penalty, wasn't given, so they sort of balanced out. Second penalty was clear cut. Obviously, the goal at the end, we got lucky in a way. Borough took a big gamble. Without that gamble, the game would have probably ended as 3-3. But, it kind of, in that moment of madness, it forgives a lot of what's gone before it, because I think I said to you before in previous shows, you score a first-minute goal and win, it's a bit dire, but if you score a last-minute winner, it suddenly seems a much better game, and everyone went away happy, elated.
Right.
Well, bar the Borough fans, of course.
Right.
I think it bought Kit a lot of free space, really, from being really under the cosh. Suddenly, everyone had forgot about all our troubles for now, and it's made a big difference into the perspective of I can't even say it. I haven't got my teeth in properly yet, Russ, but
that's okay.
The perspective of things, that suddenly we are quite clear of the relegation zone and much further up the table. So it looks a lot more rosy from where we were. But it's really, I hope that whilst we rejoice in this, it doesn't sweep things under the carpet either.
Now, listen, David, I hear you, and very interesting tape there. And let me ask you real quick about the atmosphere before the match. What was it like? Again, we were not going to be relegated. That was already taken care of before the match. So what was the atmosphere like amongst Fulham supporters going into the match?
Well, there was obviously, from Twitter, people weren't too happy with the lineup. People I saw anyway. I didn't really see anyone say, yes, this is a great lineup. Most people felt that it was still a bit negative or a bit kind of predictable. Obviously, the fact that Matt Smith, who'd been doing well, was dropped or rested, there was a bit of querying about that. Kavanagh coming in as well. Obviously, the fact that Grimmer wasn't showing. Dan Byrne also being booted out after a clean sheet. So in general, it was a bit of a negative, negative reaction to the lineup from what I saw. And it was probably quite tentative at the cottage initially because, you know, we've seen it so many times before what's happened, you know. And then we're giving away an early free kick as well. And, you know, it was the risk of deja vu was definitely there. So I think it was a very nervy sort of first half, really, for the fans' point of view. Because although the football, we didn't look threatened particularly. The football was okay, but, you know, there were moments of, there were flashes of, you know, inspiration. For example, you know, Guthrie's tackle, which put Hugo in. And there were a couple of quite nice flicks from people like Ruiz as well. But it was all mainly kind of, you know, superficial cosmetic stuff. It didn't really have much meaningful purpose, you know. And I think the mood generally got better. And obviously then, of course, it was the goal right on half time that that kind of really lifted the mood. And everyone went, of course, for their half time cup of tea or toilet break or whatever, really buzzing because it's, you know, it was or whatever people do at half time. I mean, I hung around to see the 1975 Legends come out, you know, because
that's
the,
great, by the way. I'm glad you mentioned
I thought that was fantastic. I was quite shocked to see that most of them had less grey hair than me and you, Russ. I'm not sure if it was out of a bottle. Mind you, Peter Mellor had less hair than all of us put together, I think. So, but most of them, yeah, they look pretty good for their age, considering they've got to all be 60 plus. So I was looking forward to seeing those guys because obviously that was my childhood, and I remember the heartbreak that day when we lost in the final. After, you know, it was a Europa League, yeah, Mark One really, I suppose. It was all like that. It was a brilliant run to the final, and then the heartbreak right on the day. But it was a great. It was half time was when things changed, and then sadly second half. Although, you know, we did our best to stuff it up at some points. You know, it really made for an entertaining game for both sets of fans, I guess, from different times, and also for neutrals. I mean, it was a fantastic game that is such a fortunate one that on this occasion you was able to see it live, because you'd never capture that excitement and atmosphere, I think, watching it on a delayed stream or whatever, on a replay. So,
right,
you know, not knowing what's going to happen, it's fantastic, wasn't it?
It was, and Mike and I were lucky enough to be able to watch it, so I'm glad that we were able to. And David, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm glad that we had that ability, because if I watched it, say, today, I don't think it would have the same effect as it did watching it live, and it was a pretty wild affair. Before I go to Mike, you know, you've already touched a little bit on the starting 11. Anything else you want to say before I get his thoughts?
Well, I didn't know until afterwards, obviously, until I spoke to Jack Grimmer and asked him what happened, why he wasn't in. Dan Byrne and Sean Hutchins, I spoke to them as well, and Sean said you'd have to ask the gaffer, but Dan Byrne basically kind of, you know, agreed with the fact that because Michael Turner's not going to be available next week, I think they wanted to get Sean Hutchison back in and up to speed, give him a game under the belt. Yeah, give him a game under the belt so that he could obviously play next week at Norwich, and then let Dan Byrne come back in, assuming, of course, Bodiroff isn't preferred and fit. So I can understand that to a point, but it seems harsh on Dan Byrne nevertheless. I mean, you could just say, well, why don't you drop Michael Turner then? He's not going to be around next week, so just drop him. But, you know, Scott Parker, we thought he might be out, and he said he's
right.
he doesn't think he'll be back next week either when I spoke to him. It's touch and go on that one, so he may have played his last game this season for us. But, yeah, it was just the fact that, I suppose it was good that Patrick Robb was on the bench, but there was some hope that we might actually see him start. Again, I spoke to him afterwards, and he's desperate to play. He's really desperate to play, and he's not at all fazed by the fact that, you know, it's a tough league and that we're doing badly or everyone is twice his size in physicality. He just wants to play. He's desperate to get out of there, you know.
Right.
And obviously, his parents are desperate to see him play as well, you know. And so I managed to see most of the guys after the game, and George Williams said he'd be running again not too distant future. He's like really coming along well, and he hopes to be back playing by September. So, you know, sometimes you get these little setbacks with minor other strains when you've not been playing, but so far so good for George. It's fantastic that he's on his way back there. And of course, all the players are in kind of quite happy mood, and I think I shared with this you yesterday, and obviously this will, like, you know, upset some of the listeners, obviously, but I took Brian Ruiz by the hand and shook his hand and thanked him for his contributions to Fulham, you know? Yeah.
Well,
just because
David,
that
was very big of you to do that, David.
Yeah, no, he's a very nice man. He's quite a shy chap, quietly spoken, yeah? But he's a very nice chap, and he's a very talented footballer. It's just it hasn't really worked out for him at Fulham.
Yeah,
we're not really the club for him, and this league, or even the Premier League, doesn't seem to be the league for him either. But doesn't mean that you know, I don't think I've ever shown him disrespect or been rude about him. I might have said that he's been rubbish, or I didn't think he did very well. But personally, he's a lovely chap. So I shook his hand, you know, and you know, wished him best, because he said he doesn't know what he's doing next season. But I think it's probably obvious that, you know, he'll be somewhere else. And, you know, it's unlikely we will exercise an extension, and maybe he wouldn't want that anyway. It would be unkind to do that to him. But no, the starting lineup, you know, you can understand some of it. On other bits, you would have liked to have seen other things, perhaps. But why did he bring Hugo back for Smith? But the trouble is, annoyingly, of course, we got the result. So by hook or by crook, we got the result. So I guess. And the performance was a lot better against a good team as well, because remember the dross we've seen against Blackpool and against Wigan, you know, absolute negative dross completely.
How about Rotherham?
That's right. That's what I meant, Rotherham, really, more than Blackpool, to be honest with you. Although Blackpool wasn't great, but the pitch was not helpful. But yeah, Rotherham and Wigan was dross, and this was, you know, 100 times better, really, against a much better team. At least there was a bit of energy and passion and stuff in there. So, you know, not everyone's cup of tea, the starting lineup. I would have liked to have seen it a bit different, but he did actually kind of play to what I thought he would do. I said he'd play the diamond, which he did, and I thought he'd play Richards at left back. So he wasn't a million miles away from what I said otherwise, so I don't know why I was too upset about it, really, but there was just something niggled me about it. But
okay.
It all worked out for the best, didn't it?
All right, David. Let me get Mike involved in the show. I feel bad. Mike's been like sitting on the line with us
as
well. Mike, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11. I'm going to ask you a question, and then I will go back to David before we go any further after that. Did Fulham miss Scott Parker? I want to ask you that after you share your thoughts on the starting 11.
The thoughts on the starting 11, I feel like Kit was a little bit confused because I had a feeling Ruiz and Rodallega were going to play kind of like a send-off match, basically, final home game of the season. It's been kind of a season to forget, so you two go on out there, show the fans what you can do. Rodallega potentially score another goal. Ruiz kind of, you know, clear up the doubters, all that stuff, show them what kind of a class player you are. So I had a feeling they were both going to start, and I had a feeling we were going to go back to the diamond that we were used to from this season. when it came to the back four, towards the end of the season, I kind of never knew who was going to be there. Was it going to be Bodrov, Hutchinson, Byrne? We got Turner, Jazz Richards, Grimmer, Hoogland, Stafelidis. I mean, there was never really a solidified back four, so I wasn't really sure who was going to play. But when I saw the team sheet based off the previous few matches, I can see that being probably the most, maybe not logical, but Kit's most preferred back four. I'm glad to see Tunnicliffe getting some game time. I think the only thing this kid lacks is some confidence, and you can definitely see that in the end of the game when Ross rounded the goalkeeper for the third goal. We'll talk about that later, of course, but you can just kind of see it in his body language. Tunnicliffe isn't too confident when it comes to shooting on goal or having those high-pressure situations. So the fact that he's starting with that kind of lack of confidence either shows a lack of depth in the squad or just truly how much potential he really has, which I would like to think it's that. Guthrie has probably been the best loanee we have all season, and if we could keep him, I would love to keep him. That may not be a very popular sentiment, but I think Guthrie hasn't really put too many feet wrong in the time he's played with us. Kavanaugh, he's too small physically. He gets pushed over. But his left foot is a wonderful strike. Kind of reminds me of Risa a little bit with how much power he can put behind it. He just needs to build up his upper body strength.
Right.
We didn't really have too many other options at that point. Overall, I just, like, going back to the confused portion, you know, was Kit going for the win? Because if he was really going for the win, I mean, granted, this is in hindsight, it's 2020, but you would think that Smith would have started over Rodallega if he was truly thinking about going for all 3 points. So he kind of went for the sentimental value, I think, of putting Rodallega in there, or potentially to confuse Middlesbrough, who think we're going to play Smith and we don't. We go back to the diamond. I don't really know the logic in this lineup. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I was a little bit confused, baffled by the whole situation. We're throwing in some of our loanees with some players who haven't played in a while and then dropping some of our more recently preferred players. So, you know, overall, at this point of the season, with the way our season has gone, I wasn't too sure about why Kit was putting out some of the players he was doing, and I'm going to have to settle for that. I really could not understand why those 11 were out there. I'm not saying they were poor choices, but there was no, in my mind, logical reasoning that brought us to those 11. So it's kind of it sums up our season, really. Kind of confused on who we're going to play out there. And then every time Fulham get on the pitch, they're confused on whether they want to come out in the first or second half, because they sure as hell don't come out for the whole 90 minutes. So.
Oh, very interesting take there, Mike. And again, at this point, I do want to ask you about Scott Parker. You were talking about Danny Gatti.
I'm just curious
your thoughts on this, because obviously he was out injured, and David and I talked in the prior show. You know, I asked him who was key man. We pretty much always say Scott Parker. So
How
did Fulham fare without him? I'm curious your thoughts on that, and then I'll go to David.
Yeah, this goes back to the last show I did with Giannis, when they said, who do you think, when Emilio asked who we think is the most important person we get to cover for in the summer, and I said Scott Parker, and I stand by that, because although he may be sometimes a frustrating player, and yes, he's aging, so his best days are really behind him, we need someone with that kind of leadership, that cool, calm, collected head in the center of the park. He always got the ball and was able to kind of see plays build before they actually happened, as well as he's just a warrior. He would throw his body in positions where no other player would, because a boot would be coming to his face, or he would just collide into three or four other players trying to get to the ball. I mean, he kind of embodies everything that you want in a central midfielder. And so do I think we miss Parker for this? I absolutely do. If we could play Parker 90 minutes every single game all season, he would be the first name on my team sheet. He has been a true leader and a great captain for us this season, regardless of how the season has gone. And when he retires, whichever club gets him as a coach or a mentor or an academy staffer, is going to be very, very fortunate, because Scott Parker has so much more to give than just his technical prowess. I think his mind, his brain was built for this game, and I think he is very much a Murphy-like player where he is a true leader of men rather than just someone who's good at playing the game.
I totally agree with you, and it's funny you mentioned that, because I was speaking to our co-host Emilio earlier today, and we were talking about the future with Scott Parker and how we would like him to be around, but after that possibly move into a coaching role with Fulham. You know, hopefully Fulham will look at that route down the road, because I could see him being a coach of some kind, you know, helping out the manager and, similar to the situation with Ryan Giggs, maybe, you know, stay with Fulham a couple more seasons and then venture into coaching, but it'll be interesting to see what he does with the rest of his career. I hope he sticks around. David, I want to get your thoughts on Scott Parker. Like I just mentioned, we did talk about him on the last show as the key man. How did Fulham fare without him?
Well, he hasn't played the last two games, and we won both of them. So pour that in your pipe and smoke it, I guess, for the controversy roundtable next time, isn't it? You know,
right?
Nothing is kind of simple, is it, when it comes to Fulham? Really, obviously, I think it's a big miss, and I think he's been a great player for us. But we've won two on the trot without him. So, you know, what do you make of that? So, you know, there is life after Scott Parker as well, I would imagine. Much as I hope that he can put another good season in, but it depends on the players around him, you see, because it's like anything. It's the Brian Ruiz situation as well, isn't it? It's like pick any player who is distinctive, perhaps, in the way they play, that you need to have the right balance in the side otherwise. And Scott Parker is very good at what he does, but there's things he doesn't do, and you need people who can do that. And perhaps someone like Danny Guthrie and Tony Cliff can't do the things that Parker does, but maybe they do other things that he doesn't. So it's that balancing act, and it's getting that team together and the jigsaw. So, you know, I hope he stays. I hope he's got another season in him with the right players around him. But, you know, there is life without him as well, and we will have to get used to that one day. We can't expect much longer. Maybe one more season out of him, but that would probably be it, wouldn't it?
Right. No, listen, David, if we get another season out of him, I think that would be fantastic. I think beyond that would be asking too much and probably not the right move for Fulham Football Club. I'm talking about if he played regularly, if he came on as a sub at some point. I mean, you know, again, I wouldn't be against it. I'm talking about after next year. But would he want that role? Would he want a Ryan Giggs-type role? I don't know. I don't know. He might want to keep on playing regularly. Who knows? All right. All right, let's move on. Let's break down this match. I'm looking forward to talking about all these key moments, and there are several of them. And, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Let's start with a player that again, has, you know, again, he's up and down. You know, he does tease you a little bit with his ability, and, you know, he has his moments, and then he has, you know, again, he's hot and cold. I'm talking about Hugo. We're going to start in the first half, in the 21st minute. Hugo had a great shot to score here. I mean, great opportunity, but it was saved by the Middlesbrough goalkeeper, Dimitrios Kostantopoulos. Talk about this opportunity for Hugo early in the match.
Yeah, I thought Hugo was bound to score this. It was a great setup. But that being said, when you look back at the replay, the ball was kind of under his feet, underneath him there, behind him. He was struggling off a defender. You know, I really thought he was going to score this. And in actuality, if you look at the strike, he had power in it, and it was curving towards the corner. And it really was just a fantastic reactionary save from Kostantopoulos in order to get his big old paw to that ball and keep it out. So, you know, given the circumstances and the speed and the player right on him, we can say we should have told Hugo should have buried it, but seeing, you know, his hot and cold status this season and how there are some, you know, sitters that he should really be scoring it, somehow he pulls off things from incredible angles. You know, I wasn't too surprised he missed it. I mean, overall, yes. At the end of the day, you're a striker. You're paid to score goals. He should have buried this. But it really turned out not to be his day, because there were several opportunities where, like a header later on, I'm sure you'll bring that up, that it just – I think it wasn't so much Hugo's fault or his poor play as it was Kostantopoulos just playing a blinder. I mean, he was making some incredible saves and really kept Middlesbrough in it for much of the game, when we definitely could have scored one or two more. Same thing can be said for us when we got a few lucky chances that Middlesbrough should have buried. But this first, the 21st minute or so that you said, you know, I think Hugo did as much as he could with the run of play that was happening at the time. And I think it was really just an outstanding save by the keeper that kept him off the score sheet rather than a poor effort on his part.
I totally agree with you. I think this has much more to do with the keeper. This is a good opportunity, and unfortunately, Hugo was a victim of a great save. I don't think this is Hugo's fault. I think this has more to do with the goalkeeper in this instant. But, you know, again, it's frustrating watching Hugo, because he does get these very good opportunities. All right, David, like we have talked about, Fulham really had the better play. You know, you mentioned earlier that Middlesbrough had that free kick, that very interesting free kick. But that was basically about it. But Fulham did have one other opportunity before we're going to talk about the first goal, and that was in the 40th minute, a free kick by Ross McCormack. It was about 30 yards away. It just went wide. Talk about this.
I think it was a bit ambitious by McCormack. Rather than the usual up and over the wall, he's tried to bend it around the wall.
Right.
And it's bent, but it had too much to do. I mean, from where I was, it looked like it was safely wide. It wasn't like it was just wide from my angle. It was just to bend it around the wall and back in, you know, is very, very difficult to get that much bend on it. So it was just it had too much to do with the ball. Yeah, sure, it's good that he went to try something different, but I think the only way to score that, he would have had to get it over the wall and into the corner somehow. So I didn't really see that as a terrible effort or a chance as such, a half chance, but we haven't been fantastic on free kicks. We've had a few of them, but no, it was it was a bit ambitious, I think.
Okay, fair enough. And, you know, because, again, I watched it back a few times, and I definitely agree with you. Very, very good take there, David. All right, Mike, back to you. We are going to go to the goal. this is in the first minute of stoppage time, right before the end of the half, Michael Turner scored on a header which was assisted by Sean Hutchinson with a headed pass which came following a corner. Talk about this.
As we know, all know, Fulham have been pretty god-awful at corners this entire season, and for a few seasons, actually. Not being able to make it past the first man, having some really inaccurate corners and set pieces, which has cost us many times from having goal-scoring opportunities. So this came as a huge relief to me. And it also really shows how much we have missed height within our team, because you've got Sean Hutchinson and Turner, who are definitely not small lads, and Hutchinson beats his man, flicks it on. Turner does this, it was kind of like a dive, but more like a stooping low to get to the ball header past the goalkeeper. And this is the kind of goal and the fundamentals that I think that we've been lacking many times throughout the season, kind of goals that get scored upon us that they're just too simple and they're too easy. And we've seen other players be able to do it. So it made me really, really happy to be able to see us to take a corner and then not only take a corner but deliver it with accuracy and pace, which allows Hutchinson to knock it on to his teammate rather than be selfish and take it for himself, and allows us to score this goal. I think it was a well-worked goal, and I think we were highly deserving of it at the time, because I think in the first half, overall, we were definitely the better team, and it came at a very precious moment right before the halftime whistle. So I think it was a great goal. I'm very happy to see Turner, end his Fulham loan spell with a goal.
No, listen, great. The timing was fantastic, and like you mentioned, we have struggled on corners, and then to be able to score off of one was great. But I'm going to ask you, because again, you listened to the announcer. The announcer said going into the second half that he thought this would be a talking point that there should have been offside. What are your thoughts about that?
No, I don't think it was offside. When the ball was played to him, I don't think he was offside. Now, when Hutchinson got his head to the ball and actually turned it on to him, then, yeah, he shuffled a little bit to the right because the ball was coming low and forward in front of him. So in order to stoop low to get to it, he did have to move. I can see how it would look offside, and I've looked at the replay several times, and maybe David, from his view, did see an offside. But
I'm going to ask him in a second.
Yeah, from my view, it was right there on the line. I mean, it really could have been called either way by whoever the linesman was and whatever he thought at the time. I'm just very glad he made the absolute right call, because when the ball was played to him from Hutchinson, he was onside in my perspective from what I saw.
Okay, fantastic. David, you were there. Did you get a good view of this?
No, I had to look at it on the Football League Show replay. Obviously, the whole angle changed. I was daydreaming for a moment then, but obviously it was a short corner we took on this occasion, wasn't it? Because I think it was Ruiz played it to Tunnicliffe, who played
and
it back
Tunnicliffe
to Ruiz.
Played it back, yeah.
Yeah, and Ruiz then put it in for Hutchinson, who headed it back down for Turner. And at the point where Hutchinson heads it, it looks like Turner is level with the Borough defender. Obviously, the moment later, yeah, of course, he's in clear ground, but that always happens when defenders are sort of pushing out. So it looks like he's absolutely level on, basically, because you can use the 6-yard box as a line, I think, to judge.
Right.
And it looks dead level. Definitely too close to call, for sure. But, obviously the ref and his assistants were happy with it. And I think, the rules say you should always give the benefit of the doubt to the attacker, believe it or not, in this day and age. So I don't see any reason for it to be other than a good goal. So, yeah, I was happy with that.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so Fulham and the half up 1-0, and I think, again, talk about momentum. Going into the half up 1-0, what's interesting, again, we're going to switch to the second half, and I'm going to talk about the announcer again, because I believe the announcer's name was Martin Fisher, talked about how there was a tactical change at the beginning of the second half. Mike, you might have heard this, talk about change to a 4-2-3-1 where they moved Bamford back into the three. Into the midfield three, and it seemed to pay off right away, because they definitely came out with more fury to begin the second half. Let's start there, and then we'll work our way through this. And Mike, I'm going to go to you. I'm going to go right to you, because again, in the we're talking about now in the, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to get my bearings here. In the 53rd minute, Ross McCormick was fouled in the box, and Fulham were rewarded a penalty, and McCormick scored right before that, possibly there could have been a penalty call then. And, you know, again, there were calls for a penalty right before that on a situation, again, involving McCormack. Let's talk about the goal and the penalty taken and this whole situation that led up to it. Like I said, possibly there could have been a penalty call before that, and then, of course, the penalty is called.
Okay, yeah. You know, the penalty that could have been called before, I think the referee made the right decision, even though it would have gone, you know, I think he made the right decision and it wasn't a penalty kick. However, the one with Ross McCormack where he scores our second goal to go 2-0 up, you know, that's one of those goals where I think had it been called on Fulham and we had, let's say Middlesbrough had been awarded a penalty for a similar challenge, from what I saw, I think I'd probably have been really upset. It's kind of just like in the eye of the beholder kind of a penalty, because I can definitely see on a perspective being a Borough fan and seeing that penalty and what Ayala did. I didn't see too much wrong with it, and in fact, when I look back at it, I see more of a, you know, he was impeding a scoring opportunity. He was indeed, but I think Ross was kind of anticipating it, already seeing the angle he was at, and if you look the way Hoogland passed the ball, If the player was to let McCormack get it, he wasn't really in too dangerous of a position, especially where the defender was being goal side of him. So I'm not saying Ross McCormack dived. I definitely don't think he dived. There was definitely a shove there, and with momentum he went down. But did he go down a little easier than, you know, he could have? I do think that maybe he did. So that first penalty that we got and scored the goal from, It was 50-50. It really just depends. Being a Fulham fan, I think it's a Stonewall penalty every single day. But if you look at it from a Middlesbrough point of view, I can see how they make the argument that it was a very weak penalty to give. So overall, I'm very pleased it went our way. And I think McCormack is probably the second or third best penalty kick taker I've ever seen Fulham wear a Fulham shirt, at least in my time, obviously, following Fulham. So, I mean, the way he struck that ball right into the bottom right corner with ease and having such a cool head was brilliant. And he's definitely the player that I want to see taking all of our set pieces if we could have him take every single one.
Good stuff. And I would put Murphy and Berbatov ahead of him, but I agree.
As would I.
Yeah, but his penalties have been good. David, I want to go back to you because, Mike, I do agree with you. I think, you know, again, I think Ross McCormack went down a little easy. That's just my thoughts on it. He was pushed, but he did go down easy. David, you and I talked yesterday a little bit about this. You thought that the opportunity right before that should have been called more than this one. Just share with me your thoughts on this whole situation with the two situations, I guess you could say.
Well, there was that mad bit just before that, like pinball, where the ball was buzzing between McCormack and Hugo.
Right.
I thought Ross was hauled back, and there should have been a penalty. And then the ball's come back in, and I thought Ross, I thought he played for it, basically, is what I thought. And so there should have been a penalty in there, but not for what I was actually given. I thought it was a soft penalty. I would have been on that alone, very unhappy had that gone against us. I thought it was completely played for.
And you're being honest, and I'm glad that all three of us are being honest here. You know, we're not saying that he dived. We're just saying that again, he went down. It seemed a little easy. You know, again, he was fouled, but he went down. So again, you know, very good point by you, David. If you know, again, if you're a fan of Middlesbrough, you're probably pretty upset by this. But to your point, David, you know, maybe it's a makeup from the opportunity before that they didn't call. You know, I don't think refs look at it that way, but I'm just saying, you know, it kind of evens itself out. So again, you know, I'm not going to be upset that they called the penalty and Fulham go up 2-0. And I'm sorry, guys, I jumped way over something. You know, I got confused. Shocker, I get confused. I forgot to mention the great chance to score that Hugo had, and another great save by the goalkeeper that was early in the second half, but I jumped right ahead to the goal. So now Fulham are up 2-0. And David, I'm going to go right back to you. I definitely want to talk about this because I think this is a key part of the match. In the 61st minute, the Middlesbrough manager makes a triple substitution, and I'm here to tell you all three made an impact. Kike, Adam Forshaw, and Adam Reach all came on at the same time. All three definitely had a role in the comeback for Middlesbrough. Just talk about this change that the Middlesbrough manager made at this point of the match?
Well, it was a bold move. Middlesbrough knew that it was a match they need to win. And this is the sort of thing that, you know, we want to see Kip do, I think, really. This is why we get frustrated with his substitutions, because, you know, he decided, right, it's, you know, all or nothing. And it nearly worked for him, of course. You know, they were twice 2 goals behind and they pulled that back. So you've got to give them credit for trying that, obviously. So, that's the sort of thing I want to see. Yeah, it can go horribly wrong. It can make no difference. But at least they've tried. At least they've done something dynamic, you know. And that's what, I'm sure we'll all agree on about Kit, whether we like him or not, or whether we think he should stay or not. He doesn't seem to be very dynamic with his substitution and tactics. And this was a good move. That's what I want to see from my manager, obviously. If you want to talk about the other one, it was a bit of a... It was almost a lucky clearance in a way from Bettinelli. It went straight to McCormack. McCormack whipped a ball in, picked out the little dink, picked out Hugo. And Hugo, he was struggling to get on top of it and get power on it from the angle it came in at. But he got a reasonable header in. It just hung in the air long enough for the keeper to get a hand to it. I wouldn't say Hugo should have buried that one. Hugo did all he could, really, in that case. It was just the keeper had just enough time and enough reach to get his hand to it. I think had it been more of a bullet header from Hugo, had the cross been, slightly better for him, maybe, because I'm not sure if it took a little deflection which slowed the pace up. Had it been a more bullet header, the keeper would have had no chance. But it just hung in the air long enough for him there on that one. But substitutions the same. That's what I want to see. You know, I just wish Kit did more stuff like that, really.
I totally agree with you, David. That's why I wanted to really highlight this part of the match, because I think it's pivotal. You know, he has to make a change, but this is a bold change. And this manager was bold, and we'll talk about later, because being bold might have backfired at the very end. But he was true to himself, because this was an extremely bold move. 3 changes, and honestly, the changes did work for them. And, Mike, I'm going to go to you, because in the 63rd minute, Middlesbrough get themselves right back in this match with a goal by Adam Reach. He scores to make it 2-1. But I'm going to ask you, talk about the goal, and do you think Marcus Bettinelli might have done better on, or should have done better on this? I shouldn't say might have. Should he have done better on this?
I'll be honest with you. I spent about 15 minutes last night, I think, literally just looking at this one highlight and thinking, what was it Marcus's fault? Could he have done anything better? And, you know, you'll hear probably the majority of critics will say, yes, Marcus had a horrible game, a horrific game. He played a mare, and that he should have done better with this. But honestly, I think that shot, it actually reminds me of a couple that Bobby Zamora put in back in his day with us. And, again, it's one of those ones where if you're a Middlesbrough fan, you think it's an absolutely brilliant strike. And if you're a Fulham supporter, you think that Bettinelli should have done better and the strike wasn't all that great. I actually think this goal was fantastic. I think it was well struck. It dipped at the last second. It hit the ground right prior to Bettinelli trying to get a hand to it. And I really think that Bettinelli, unfortunately, couldn't do too much about this at the time the shot was taken, because with the power and the trajectory of the ball and the fact that it dips and it hits the ground right before Bettinelli's hand as he's diving to get to it, that changes everything right there. Had it never struck the ground, I think Bettinelli would have definitely saved it. He wasn't anticipating the ball striking the ground when it did, and you can't really do that with how well and how powerfully struck this shot was. So I think it really was more of credit to Reach for scoring the goal. It was Reach, correct? I believe it was Reach. Yep. I think it's more credit to him and his ability to actually create that chance from the half volley than it was Bettinelli making a mistake. Now their next, the other few goals they've had, I think the two headers, hugely Bettinelli's fault. I mean, I don't know if it was the pressure from saying that Chelsea might be looking at him that got into his head this game. I don't know if I'm sorry. I meant that other club.
That's okay, Mike.
I don't know. Another pound. Honestly, I don't know, because this game he was horrific. I mean, this is probably one of his worst games I've seen him play all season with some of his positioning and decision making. I don't know if it got to his head that Premier League clubs were looking at him. I don't know. But this goal in particular, I think it was more of credit to the striker than it was a mistake by the goalkeeper.
Okay, fantastic. And that's why I definitely enjoy breaking this down, because we can really look at it. And maybe you saw something I didn't see. At the moment, Mike, I thought that this was Bettinelli's error. But, you know, again, you're bringing up points that maybe it wasn't. Maybe this is just more about the shot and goal by Reach. It was just too difficult. you know, again, I'll definitely going to take another look at that because I thought that he could have done better. But now you got me wanting to look at it again. All right. David, back to you. 66th minute, only 3 minutes later. George Friend is given a red card on a foul in the box on Hugo. Fulmer awarded a penalty, and McCormack scores again. Talk about all this.
Well, I have to just chip in. I'm sorry, Mike, on this one. As an ex-goalkeeper or whatever, I would want to save that. I would be upset about that one. And I know Bettinelli was upset as well because he tweeted about it. Yes, it was a good shot and a good strike, but still, as a goalkeeper, you've got to be stopping those. As a top-class goalkeeper, anyway, you've got to be stopping those. So, and he'll be beating himself up about it because goalkeepers are perfectionists and they don't like to make any slight error at all. If there's anything he could have done to save it, you know, you want to save it. So I think it was a good strike, but he should have done better on that first goal.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, that's just my opinion. I played in goal, and I would be upset of letting that one in. Because you have high standards. But getting back to the point in question, the second one, obviously, we had a, you know, the interesting thing was it was Ross McCormack actually pushed the ball too far ahead. It was a bit unlucky, you know, or lucky, or whichever way you want to look at it. Because I don't think he meant to push it quite as far ahead as that. He was trying to take the man on. And in pushing it too far ahead, he couldn't get control of the ball. So all he could do was actually poke it through to Hugo. But that kind of took everybody out because it was not what was expected. I think people were expecting McCormack to go with it. So Hugo was left with a clear scoring opportunity. And just as he was about to take control, he had his, like, standing leg whipped away from him by the defender. And that was, you know, for me and I think for everyone, a clear penalty. I don't think anyone can argue otherwise about that. But what I was impressed with was the way the referee and the assistant communicated, because first he's given the penalty and then he's had some thinking time. And there's pressure from the Fulham fans started shouting off from the Hammers' end behind the goal.
Right.
And you can see the ref by the penalty spot and the assistant on the sort of the goal line talking over the intercom system. And then the refs actually come over to the assistant and they're talking. And clearly what they're discussing is whether he's been denied an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, which is the criteria and the threshold for whether it's a red card or whether it's just a penalty or a yellow card or whatever. But obviously that the rules say if you deny an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, doesn't, you know, there's these misnomers out there that it's he was the last man or he was this. You don't have to be the last man and you don't have to be. It's whether you deny an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. And he did deny an obvious goal-scoring opportunity because without that foul, he had a clear shot one-on-one with the keeper. So, and the ref and the linesman have come to that decision after communication. And he's, you know, he's got no choice, unfortunately, but to send the, you know, Friend off, which was quite ironic as he was called Friend as well. I'm not sure if they're related, but it must have been pretty hard for him if he was. But yeah, he's given him the red card, and I've got to say that, you know, this is what you expect from a Premier League ref, because he was being watched by Steve Bennett, who's an ex Premier League ref for his assessor, because I saw him after the game as well, and he, you know, the yellow card by Kavanagh was, you know, an all day long a yellow card. People thought it was harsh because it was the slightest of tugs. But when someone goes past you and you tug at them, it's a yellow card. That's what the rules say. And, you know, it's ironic, or it can be frustrating to see that people do some horrible tackles and get away with it, but they do the slightest little cynical thing and they get a yellow card. But unfortunately, the rules tend to say that anything cynical gets punished with a yellow card because they're trying to cut the cynicism out of the game. They'd rather people made attempts at wholehearted tackles and get them wrong than people were just deliberately cynical. The same was for Guthrie, obviously. He's had a little chip at someone's ankles as they've gone past him, and he's given him a yellow card for that, which was correct. But on this case, the ref, once he's assessed it all with his assistant and saw what happened, he had no choice but to give the red card, unfortunately. And, you know, it's sad because in some ways the penalty is the correct punishment, but that's what the rules say. And the refs, they get punished and penalised if they don't apply what the laws say,
right,
or the rules say. So, you know, he had to do that, unfortunately. So, you know, he had no leeway. So it was a correct decision in all respects for the penalty. And obviously, you know, it was good fight by Ross, you know, because he's had to, like, that quandary of, do I go the same way, do I put it the other way? Both penalties very well executed, gave the keeper no chance. And we've restored our two-goal advantage.
Absolutely, David. You know, very good observation and breakdown by you. And you know, at this point, listen, it's 3-1, and I'm going to talk about Ross McCormack later, because David, you know, every single week I seem to predict Ross McCormack's going to score. On many occasions, I predict a hat trick, and this is the one time I don't predict a hat trick, and the guy gets a hat trick. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, let's move on. And, Mike, back over to you, because we were just talking about Marcus Bednell. We're going to talk about him again, because, again, in the 73rd minute, Millsboro scored on a header by Danny Ayala. Talk about this goal, but it's also about the build-up play, because there's an opportunity here for Marcus Bettinelli to actually catch the ball, and he forces it out wide, and then it leads to the goal, unfortunately. Talk about this.
I don't know what was going through his head. Honestly, when I saw it, I could not understand. There was no one around him. It was going right to his hands, and instead of just catching the ball, he punched it out. I mean, punched it straight out, and it went off to the left-hand side, went straight to you know, one of the Middlesbrough players. And when this, and not only that, but it's not the fact he didn't catch it as well. It's the fact that this Middlesbrough player, Rodriguez, slow to get to him, so he kind of takes his time, puts in a beautiful cross, and then where's Bettinelli standing? He's standing in the middle of no man's land. I mean, he's just sitting there, and a header comes in, just loops over his head, straight into the back of the net. I mean, everything about this was, and like, it was just completely, it was rookie mistakes all day, every day, from Marcus Bettinelli, and I just cannot. For as much as great of a season as he's had for us, and how much of kind of a revelation he's been, and one of the bright spots, at least in my opinion, throughout the team, this game was not. I don't know what was going through his mind. I don't know if he was distracted, because that was one of those decisions that could have desperately cost us the game, and he did several of them throughout this match, but this one in particular was just fundamentals, back to basics. You have the opportunity to catch the ball and hold on to it and retain possession. You do that. When a cross comes in, you either commit to going to punch and clear the ball from the header that's coming from the cross, or you stay back and you try and monitor and see which way the header is going to go. I mean, there was no reason this goal should have been scored. It was completely avoidable, and all because of Bettinelli's poor decision-making from his punch.
Yes, and again, all the pressure comes back on Fulham. It's 3-2, and let's remember, at this point, they're down to 10 men. And it certainly didn't feel like they were down to 10 men, but they were down to 10 men. It's 3-2. David, I'm going to go right back to you, because, again, they're going to get the equalizer in the 88th minute. Again, down to 10 men. Talk about the goal by Kike on a header that equalizes and makes it 3-3 for a crazy finish to this match.
Well, again, this is you could be looking at Bettinelli again and asking, was his positioning right? Had he started
to come
out,
asking.
Because it was a, yeah, well, you know, the ball was chipped into the area far too easily, really, that, you know, he hasn't been, the Barrow player hasn't been challenged in the box whatsoever, not really. There's people around him, but no one's on him. And as Bettinelli, maybe, has he started to come with the ball being chipped into the box, because he's just left himself far enough off his line that the header's looped over him into the goal, so. Had he been standing on his line, and I know you don't normally stand right on your line as a goalkeeper, you do stand off your line slightly, but had he been much closer to his line, it would have been, you know, an easy catch probably, or at least an easy parry. So, questions definitely there, but you can't blame Bettinelli for the goal. You have to say, well, where were the defence? Why was the guy given a free header, really? The ball just, it was too easy. It was like a training ground move that the ball was chipped into the box. And that was it, little looping header. Back of the net, and obviously it looked at that stage that we'd blown it, really, and even, I suppose, the risk that we could lose it, but certainly very, very disappointing from a Fulham point of view after being two goals up twice.
Absolutely, David, and again, Middlesbrough at this point, it's playing with 10 men, they scored two goals, it's 3-3, it's very disappointing, it's 3-3, and then we're going down the finish, and I'm thinking, obviously, probably like you guys were thinking, okay, let's just get the point. Let's see if they can get the point. And, Mike, I'm going to go to you again. This is in two parts, because obviously we're going to be talking about the way Fulham won the match with the goal. But before that, I want to ask you about the decision, because I've read a great amount about this decision by the Middlesbrough manager. Again, this is in the fourth minute of stoppage time. They have a corner kick. This is Middlesbrough. They were really putting the pressure on, and he decides to bring the goalkeeper up, to bring Konstantopoulos up as a last-ditch effort to try to get the victory. So I'm going to ask you, again, it's hindsight, but would you have made this decision if you were the manager of Middlesbrough?
No, I wouldn't. I would have taken the point, the well-fought point, down to 10 men, taking that in, because now they're, that extra point going towards automatic promotion with a game or two in hand, it's huge for them. And the fact that he made that decision and it ended up backfiring, now granted, could he have possibly have fathomed that this is going to happen? I would hope so. So it was either completely worth it or not. However, had they taken the point, they would be 1 point ahead of Bournemouth at the current right now, and they would be in second place looking at automatic promotion. Now they're tied with Bournemouth. Bournemouth have two games in hand, while Middlesbrough have one final game of the season. So this point could really be a big killer for them, especially if they don't make it into the automatic promotion slot and then they end up losing in the playoffs. It could really come down to that decision right there, potentially. So I think it was a very silly decision. Granted, could he... realistically, this for that, could he have thought, the chances are Fulham are going to clear it, it's going to fall to McCormack, McCormack's going to somehow get by the defender, around the goalkeeper, and score? Probably not. It was, statistically, it's probably not going to happen. But I think it was a really, really poor decision from an otherwise very, very intelligent, tactical, and methodical manager. On the other side, though, I also really appreciate when I see managers take those risks and take those efforts, and I applaud him for doing something that probably no other manager would have done, for better or for worse. I think, it just added another facet to the game and shows that he's not afraid to do what it takes to have his team get all 3 points. And I wish our manager would be more like that at times, rather than just settling for draws. So do I think it was the right decision in the end? No, absolutely not. But I do applaud his audacity to attempt something like that. And I think it was a great, overall a great ending to the match. So I'm happy with it.
Well, I'm obviously happy how it finished off, but it's an interesting topic. And David, I know you have to drop off. Before you drop off, I just want to ask you quickly: if you were the Middlesbrough manager, would you have done that?
Well, as I say, just before I go, Mike, I'm sorry, I have to tend to disagree with you again on this one because I feel that. Well, obviously, I agree with the fact that the audacity side of it is great to go for it, but I think. Are Bournemouth going to win at least one of their two remaining games?
Yep.
I'd have said most certainly. So it was really 3 points or nothing for me, I think. I think it,
okay.
The 3 points were much more valuable than the risk of no points or 1 point. And yeah, and you say, how many times do you see this happen where the keeper goes up and the other team actually score from it? Normally they don't. So probably on the balance of probability, he had, and they were on a roll, remember. They had the momentum. They'd got back into the game twice. They had 10 men, they just scored a few minutes ago. We were definitely, creaking a little bit. I think he did the right thing. It was a bold move. It didn't come off, but the 1 point wouldn't have helped them because when Bournemouth win, one of these two games, it's going to kind of, I think it's going to be difficult for them. They needed 3 points yesterday, so I applaud what he did, and even though it didn't work out for him. And I'll be back in a sec.
Not a problem. Okay. Mike, let's now go to the second part of this, which is obviously the goal. Now, again, it starts off of a corner kick. The play gets out. The ball gets out, I should say. The ball gets out, and Ross McCormack takes it, and the goalkeeper obviously has to rush back, but he gets past the goalkeeper and smoothly puts it in the back of the net in full. Get the victory. Talk about the end and what was going through your mind watching Ross McCormack go down the pitch.
When Turner knocked it out and Tunnicliffe was running for it, but McCormack got there first, I thought, there was that little tussle between McCormack and the last defender there where the defender almost got the ball from Ross and Ross kind of dinked it by him and kept running. So at that point, those first few seconds, like, oh, well, there it goes. He's lost the ball. But then somehow he managed to get it by and keep sprinting up. And at this point, I'm off, out of my seat looking at what's happening because I was sure they were going to blow the whistle. We were well into stoppage time at this point. But the fact that the referee didn't, it was kind of like, okay, we can do this. And you see Tunnicliffe off on the right-hand side. side, and you can visibly see McCormick with his right arm saying, come on, come on, come square. Like, he'll square it
right
for you, it'll be an easy goal, you can do it. And then you see Tunnicliffe slow up and kind of not brush him off, but the words apparently in the post-match were, no, 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 go get your hat trick. So Ross then comes by, weaves past the goalkeeper, and it's an easy finish. I mean, I expect Ross to score these, you know, 10 times out of 10, because it's a simple matter of rounding the goalkeeper and putting it in the back of the net, especially with a man of his quality. But I think what's really key to this is, one, how unselfish Ross McCormick is. I mean, most strikers would be like, oh, I have a hat-trick opportunity, another goal to add to my tally for the season. It's the last two games. Of course I'm going to take it. But like we've seen from Ross all season long, it's more about the team than himself. It's always about the team rather than himself. And so the fact that he was willing to say, all right, Tony, let's go, come up, we'll score, you'll get your first goal for the club here, I think is brilliant. And I think the second point I want to point out is that what I went back to in the beginning of the show about how there's a lack of confidence with Ryan Tunnicliffe. I don't think he lacks skill, and I don't think he lacks potential. What I think he lacks is confidence and a cool head to score in front of goal, and that's truly missing from his game, because he's a tough tackler, he's got speed, he's got endurance, and I think he's got some great vision, but he just lacks that final third touch or that ability to score a goal when the opportunity is open for him, because there have been several times this season that I've watched him where, I mean, why not just have a shot, and he doesn't. He stops the ball, he slows on the play, he looks for a pass, so I think it just kind of shows how unselfish McCormick is, but also how unconfident Tunnicliffe is, and that's a huge issue going forward into the taking care of these players. Obviously need to be shown that they can do something more than just be an assist maker or a someone who can pass the ball, but someone who can actually score for us when we need them to score. So I think overall it was a great goal, and I think McCormick did a great job. But I would have loved to have seen Tunnicliffe get his first goal for the club.
Okay, very interesting take. Thank you for your explanation on that. David, real quick, because Mike brought up a very interesting point about Tunnicliffe. We talked about this at the beginning of the show. I don't want to spend too much time because I really want to move on. Do you think Ryan Tunnicliffe lacks confidence and that's been his problem with Fulham? Or do you think he is not as talented as we hope he is? I'm curious your thoughts on this because I've talked to Emilio about it, and he has his reservations about Tunnicliffe. Do you think it's more about lack of confidence or lack of skill?
You're going to hate me here, Mike, but I kind of think it's more lack of skill than lack of confidence, actually.
Fair enough.
Sorry, Mike. I just seem to be disagreeing with most of the stuff. I've watched him play, and he's never shy for me. He never shies away from the ball. He's always happy to take the ball. He gives 100%. I said before that he reminds me a bit of a Sidwell, modern-day Sidwell. He's not scared to be involved. So I don't think he does lack confidence. My reservations are whether he is just good enough or not. You know, whether his passing is good enough or whether his ability is good enough, because I don't see enough from him consistently. I see consistent effort, but I don't see consistent results and skill.
Okay, fair enough. And listen, it's okay if you guys disagree. I have no problem with you guys disagreeing. And Mike respects you, David. Don't worry about that. Mike respects your opinion on things. Don't even worry about it. You know, you guys can disagree. Right, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I hope Brian Ruiz gets his contract extended, though.
I love it. Wow. That just made my day there, Mike. Thank you very much for saying that. Okay. All right, let's move on to full-time stats, and then we're going to rate the players. We got a little less than a half hour, actually, about 25 minutes. We got to speed this up a little bit. Here are the full-time stats. Fulham had 51% of the possession to 49% for Middlesbrough. Shots, believe it or not, Middlesbrough had more. They had 17 to 14 for Fulham. On target, Middlesbrough had 6. Fulham had 8 on target. Shooting accuracy, Fulham were more accurate at 57% to 35% for Middlesbrough. Passing accuracy about the same, 70 to 71% for Middlesbrough. Key passes, Middlesbrough had more. They had 14 to Fulham's 10. Crosses, Fulham had 18 crosses. Middlesbrough had 29. Fouls, Middlesbrough had 12. Fulham had 6. Corners, this one's interesting. Middlesbrough had 10. Fulham only had 3. David, what sticks out to you with the full-time stats?
It shows it was a fairly even game in the main when you look at possession and the shots. I was pleased to see that we had a better proportion of shots on target to shots overall, which was, after Hugo and Corley had done their bit second half, it didn't help. But, you know, otherwise, it was a lot better. Corners, of course, you know, that showed, you know, something as well. And again, we've conceded, you know, three goals at the end of the day, although I think nothing was directly from a corner, was it, in the same way as before. So we were a bit stronger, but still, you know, you're surprised to see a match that's so evenly balanced where the corners are quite disproportionate, really. But for
right.
me, I'm pleased that we had more shots on target, and, you know, our shooting was a lot better, really, than it has been in some recent games in terms of both number of shots and our shooting accuracy.
See, David, that's what stands out for me, because we've been complaining pretty much the entire season of the lack of accuracy, and it was actually pretty good in this match, and that's important. That's actually a very good thing. That stood out for me. Mike, what stood out for you?
Same thing. The fact that we had 8 shots on target out of 14 shots taken, I'll take that every game if we could do it, because as we well know, this whole season, like you just mentioned, you know, we've been crying out for not just more shots to be taken, but shots that actually count, shots that actually are on target and can either be goals or get parried away for a rebound, some sort of additional second, third order effect from taking these shots on target that could potentially, go in our favor. So I think that's truly what was key. And the fact that they had 10 corners and that we only had 3, and yet we managed to, stop most of those corners and come away with a win, you know, our defense has probably been the poorest overall unit for our entire season. I don't think it's really been the midfield that they've had glaring problems or the strikers. I think our defense has really been the issue. So I'm glad to see we're getting back to basics and at least attempting to fix our set-piece problem, which has been a huge thorn in our side for far too long. So overall, I think it's the shots, but also the fact that we can soak up so much pressure when it comes from set pieces. I really think that's a way forward for us.
Okay, very good. Very good by both of you on the stats. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's start with rating the players. And like I mentioned, we are running short of time, so we're going to have to do this fairly quickly. So I'm just going to let you know how we're going to do it. We're going to rate the goalkeeper, then we're going to do the back four, the midfield, and then the two strikers. That's how we're going to do it, just for time's sake reason. So, David, I'll start with you. I want your rating for Marcus Bettinelli. I'm very curious your thoughts on his performance.
Well, obviously, question marks on all three goals. And there were some early and kicking issues as well. But, you know, it's been a difficult job for him, and there are other parts of the game that, of course, he did quite well still. So I'm actually going to give him a 5. I think I could go harsher, but I wouldn't say clear-cut every goal was down to him. It wasn't like it was a bloomer. You know, there was other people involved. For example, Hugo not closing the guy down after his punch, the defence not, you know, allowing that free header on that guy, and, of course, the shooting opportunity as well for the first goal. So 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. Mike, to you.
He gets a 4 out of 10 for me. I think it was a very, very poor game by him, one that is a rarity for Marcus Bettinelli in this season. I pretty much agree with everything that David just said, except that I think he deserves a 4 for some really poor positioning and some poor decision-making that cost him goals. Granted, other people were involved as well, but I think Marcus should have done a lot better from what we've come to expect from him. So 4 out of 10 for me.
Okay. Tough grading, and I get that, because I thought this was unfortunately not a great match for Marcus Bettinelli. He will have better matches, and it's a learning process, and this is just not good for him. So I understand both of you guys why you're rating him so low. All right, right back to you, Mike. Let's do the back four. Let's do Hoogland, Hutchinson, Turner, and Richards.
Hoogland and Richards both get 6. We Middlesbrough have some phenomenal wing playing, some wingers and some fantastic midfielders. And I think when they got out wide for these crosses, granted they had plenty of crosses, I think Hoogland and Jazz did a decent job of keeping these men covered and keeping their crosses, you know, to being ineffective and inaccurate. So I think they both get sixes from me for the sake of time. I won't go too much more into that. Hutchinson and Turner, I think the two worked well towards, you know, getting the goal for us. And I think that, you know, Turner, I like him, but I can see that this, I wouldn't want to keep him on much more than just being a low knee for the rest of the season. Hutchinson, I think, has really developed into his own. I'm going to give Turner a 7 and Hutchinson also a 7. So the center backs get 7 out of 10, and Hoogland and the Jazz get 6 out of 10.
Interesting, very interesting. David, over to you.
Well, this is where I'm back to agreeing with Mike, really, in a way. I also gave both fullbacks 6 out of 10, but for different reasons. I think Hoogland, as we could say, was a game of two halves for him, really. I thought he started really badly, Hoogland. Some terrible passing and positioning and things. But I thought he got better as the game went on. So I evened that out for 6 out of 10. Richards was probably the model of consistency, really. The same all the way through. For me, it was one of his better games for us, really. Although he didn't really offer much going forward, he was playing on the wrong side, but I thought he was fairly solid. So 6 for both of those. The centre-backs, you know, I look at it and I think in some ways they could have done better with some of the heading, obviously. You know, especially on the third goal, there was no one there. But, you know, Turner scored a very, very important goal for us. And I was pleased to see Hutchinson back. And Hutchinson made a couple of key tackles as well and the assist on the goal. So I will just about give them 7 out of 10, but if we had more time, I would be thinking of Mimi-esque percentage points.
Okay, David. Good stuff. All right. Now let's talk about the midfield. We're talking about Ryan Tunnicliffe, Danny Guthrie, Sean Kavanaugh, and your friend Brian Ruiz. Yes, your friend.
Well, the Brian Ruiz will be an interesting one because I saw someone on Twitter give him 9 out of 10, and he was told off by my son, the Brian Ruiz fan club, that it was much too high, so that kind of says it all, but I'll come to him last. I thought Guthrie was fairly solid. A couple of good points of note, you know, for example, that challenge which led to the Hugo chance in the first half, some good use of the ball as well, but maybe a tad lucky to stay on the pitch. Rightly carded for a cynical foul. Referee on this one, because the second one wasn't a cynical one, he's given him the benefit of the doubt. He didn't have to book him, but I bet if he hadn't have been booked, he would have got booked for that one. So he was a bit lucky to stay on. So we need to watch out on that, or he needs to watch out on that. But I'm going to give him 6.5 because I think he was generally good otherwise. Tunnicliffe, again, you know, it's a bit of a Hoogland situation, really. I thought he started really badly as a few early misplaced passes. But, you know, he's always in there, and it was his kind of energy that led to the corner right at the end of the first half for the goal. And he was busy in there, and without Scott Parker, he's put in a good effort without being spectacular, so I'm going to give him also 6.5. Kavanagh still, to me, looks like a little boy lost sometimes running around there. He did get involved more. I don't think he did anything terribly wrong. And I was shocked at the end of the match. I said to you that I saw him carrying a baby, that he looks like a baby himself to me. This is, unfortunately, the nature of getting old, isn't it? But when you see people like this. But, yeah, he looks like a baby to me in terms of footballing terms. He needs to beef up a bit and stuff. But I thought he did okay, but he needs to be doing more. He needs to be finding a clearly defined role, I think. So I'm going to give him 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Mr. Ruiz, yeah, there were some great touches in there. There was a couple of times, annoyingly, which gets my goat, where he's lost the ball, he's been dispossessed again. He's just not strong enough at times, and he's a big guy, physically. But, you know, he chipped in, and I think, you know, it was one of his better games, really. So I'm going to give him 6.5 as well.
Okay, very good. Mike, over to you.
Tunnicliffe is going to give a 6.5 for me. I think that, you know, he's got tons of energy, as been stated before, and I think that, again, in my opinion, it's more of a lack of confidence and a lack of inconsistency with which team he's playing for, or where he's playing, what position, rather than a lack of skill on his part. Granted, I could be proven horribly wrong next season, but I would like to think that that's why. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I think he had a pretty decent game just based off his energy alone. So he gets a 6.5 from me. Guthrie, You know, again, like I've said before, I think he's one of the better loanees we've had in a while. He hasn't really put too many feet wrong in the games that he's played, and I really like his situational awareness out there in midfield.
Hey, guys, I got to drop off for a second. David, can you take over for a second?
Sure, yeah, carry on. Okay. Carry on, Mike, with what you're saying.
Okay, yep. So I think Guthrie's going to get a 7 out of 10 for me. I think that he worked his rear end off, and he was potentially looking a little bit higher for getting into kind of the finer details, but the cynical challenge, you know, those kind of challenges, I mean, had he gotten a second yellow and been a red, we would have been looking at a completely different game. So that really kind of put a darker shadow onto what looked to be a pretty decent game for the man. Kavanaugh, I completely agree with you, David. He not only looks kind of like a child lost out there, but he definitely plays like one. I mean, it's definitely men versus boy at this point. And in order for him to solidify or to get a consistent spot within this team, he is going to have to do a lot of more gym work or some sort of routine that gets him much more physically capable to, you know, go against these men like Ledbetter or Clayton or Friend, anyone that's going to challenge him. When you know he's going in for a challenge, he's probably going to lose it based off of size alone. But Kavanaugh is going to get a 6 from me for that. And Ruiz, I thought he played a great game. It's probably one of his better games for us. He loses the ball time to time. He's kind of a lightweight show pony. We all kind of know that. I think Ruiz is going to get a 7.5 for me, seeing it's probably his last game for us. And I think that being said, he did enough to, you know, to get a good nod and a round of applause to Craven Cottage for potentially and very realistically the last time.
No, I can't really disagree. I mean, I can allow you a little bit extra there for sentiment on that one, but I mean, we weren't a million miles away on that one. So I'll carry on anyway and say, right, time to rate the two strikers then, Mike. Can you give me
and
of course. Oh, no, well, we don't need you anymore, Russ. We're just going to carry on anyway, so, yeah.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to start doing songs and jokes in a minute and impressions like Yanis last week and talk about my mother-in-law and what she looks like. But, Mike, if you could carry on and do Ross and... Ross and Hugo.
Hugo gets a 6.5. He should have buried some of those chances. Granted, Konstantopoulos reason why he didn't bury them. They weren't necessarily poor finishes at all. It was more like the keeper having a great game and stopping some very, very good chances that fell for Rodgers. But he gets a 6.5. I still think that he's more of a effort man, and he's got some great skill, but there are definitely some times where you just cannot believe he hasn't buried them, or you cannot believe he hasn't made the right decision, especially with his Premier League experience and how much experience he has in the game overall. So he's going to get a 6.5. McCormick gets a 9 out of 10, man of the match. He's probably been our best player all season, and he's been our most consistent. And just his ability to finish those penalties coolly and to round the goalkeeper at the very end of the game when undoubtedly his legs are exhausted. And there was a quote in there from him saying that he's kind of picked up a knee injury in the last 6 or 7 weeks, and the fact that he's able to still do that and give his full effort all the way to the end of the whistle. I think Ross is probably the best $10 million we've spent when we look at players who we've spent that much on, such as Marley and Constant and Mitroglou. McCormick's definitely worth his weight in gold at this point with 19 goals for the season. So 9 out of 10 for McCormick, 6.5 for Rodallega.
Okay, good stuff there, Mike. Back over to you, David.
Well, I'm going to be more or less agreeing with you again, Mike, now, so we're on track again. No, after we've had our Ruiz moment. No, we weren't too bad. Hugo, I've probably been a bit harsh. I've given him 6 out of 10. Yes, he did put in a mainly positive performance, and he won us the penalty there, and there was some good link play. But too many chances missed. First one, probably could have buried it. Second one was probably a good save, but there was also one or two more very badly misdirected headers. There was a cross from the left. It might have actually been from Kavanagh, that one. I'm trying to remember who it was from, but completely miles away, didn't even get near the target, Hugo, and he's just got to be doing better than that, unfortunately. So, you know, for everything he does good, you know, he then goes and misses chances that as a striker you've got to be taking, or you've got to be at least testing the goalkeeper. Ross, completely agree with you on that one. I would have given him 10 if he'd have, you know, done everything right, but there was a couple of little mistakes there. He's put one over the bar, when well positioned. Maybe that free kick he could have done a bit better within the first half. It was too ambitious. But you can't fault his energy in running. And he told me afterwards his legs was like jelly on that third one. That he was struggling to, get up the pitch there and everything on that one. So it definitely man of the match for me as well. You know, not just for because he got a hat-trick, but also penalties. Yes, they're very easy in one respect because you've only got the goalkeeper to beat from 12 yards, but there's a lot of mind games in there. And it was a cool head on both occasions for me. And on the third one, I think he got a bit of luck in a way because it almost got caught. He looked like he was going to lose it, but he did a good bit of close control and skill, took the man out, left the man on his backside, then left the goalkeeper on his backside, and it made for kind of the dramatic finish that we wanted. And you know, you could see how everyone went mad, and the whole team came up the pitch, including Bettinelli, to the corner flag at the far end to celebrate that goal. So, yeah, man of the match, most certainly. I don't think there'll be any doubt about that whatsoever. While I'm on, I might as well say Fofana, I thought he did okay as well, just to keep time brief for us. Yeah, and I thought he made a really positive performance there. He was useful and definitely at least a 6 out of 10 there coming on. I'm not sure if it's fair really to go up on that. I mean, Corley, very strange decision to put him right midfield. And he was actually, I think he was the nearest man to the guy who got the third goal. When I'm not sure if it was his man to get, but he was in the box when they scored their third. So, but expecting someone like Corley, a striker, to be back in marking, I don't know about that. So I'm not going to rate Corley anyway because it's a strange one.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's mine anyway.
Okay. Mike, over to you real quickly on the substitutes.
Seko, you know, he's grown on me over the season. I wasn't a big fan of Fofana when he first got here. We all know that. If you look back at some of the things I've critiqued him on, yeah, I haven't been his biggest fan. But, you know, I think he's one of those players now that if you asked me today, would I keep him over the summer if we were given an opportunity? Absolutely, I would. I think he's got great potential. I'd rather him be a Fulham player than simply a Man City player that we're building up for the future for them. So I think he came in and did a good shift for us. He's a very powerful player. He's a very direct attacking player. And I think he's going to get a 6 out of 10 for me. I don't feel comfortable personally rating Woodrow or Smith with only 9 minutes and a few minutes played each in the regular time. But if I had to, Woodrow would be the last one I'd rate. He's going to get a 6 out of 10 simply because he didn't have enough time and was in a position that is pretty foreign to him. So I think he didn't really do too much wrong. But at the same time, he doesn't really know how to play that position, as David kind of just mentioned. So he's going to get a 6 out of 10 simply because, from a neutral's perspective, he didn't do anything wrong, but he also wasn't setting the world on fire. And Smith, I can't rate. 88th minute coming in, there's no reason to rate Smith.
No, I didn't. It's not fair. But that's why I didn't rate Corley either, because he didn't have that long and it was a strange position.
Yeah.
I'm back in charge just for a second anyway. So can you give your rating for me, please, Mike, for the opposition, for Middlesbrough, and also for Kit and for the referee as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Middlesbrough are a fantastic team, and I would love to see them get promoted. I think that they're a very deserving team. I think they're a team that has great unity within their players, and when you go down to 10 men, yet you still manage to find a way back, granted from some serious mistakes on the Fulham end, but I think that Middlesbrough have a true team unity about them, and I really think that they are a great club, and they've got some great fans, and I have a lot of friends that are Middlesbrough supporters, so you know, I think Middlesbrough is going to get an 8 out of 10 simply for the fact that they kept fighting back all the way to the end, and they make those decisions to send up the goalkeeper when they know it's win or lose and they need to get it done. So I think Middlesbrough overall is going to get an 8 out of 10. That includes their manager. I think that they didn't do too much wrong. Granted, do I think we deserve to win? Yes, but I think Middlesbrough also deserve promotion to the Premier League. Kit, you know, I could go into a whole dissertation and spend a half talking about Mr. Simons and what I think about him, so I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to give him a 6 out of 10 because we got the win. Granted, his substitutions are a little bit confusing. His starting 11 was a little confusing, but I do respect him being our manager for the fact that he is doing truly what he thinks is right for the club, and the last 6 matches have been unbeaten, or on a 5-game unbeaten run, including 2 back-to-back wins. So he's going to get a 6 out of 10 for me.
That's fair enough. And what about the referee then, Mike?
I'm actually not a huge fan of Kevin Friend, actually, at all. And I think he had a great game. I think he made some pretty decent calls, calls that I also would have made as a referee or that I would have expected anyone to make. Kevin Friend's going to get an 8 out of 10 for a match well officiated along with his two linesmen.
That's great. I mean, I'm not really a great fan of Friend either. I think he comes across a bit dour sometimes as mm-hmm. a referee, but no, I agree with you completely. I thought he had a great game. If I had to be critical, he probably could have sent Guthrie off for a second yellow, and also the first penalty I thought was quite generous. So both the decisions really went our way. So I also gave him 8 out of 10, though, because I thought otherwise he played the advantage well and officiated pretty well. As regards Barry, you know, I think I'm going to give them 7 out of 10 because although they came back with a storming performance, in the first half, they were pretty dire, really, for them. For what you expect, a team who's, you know, going for a win, I thought they were quite languid, really, or whatever. First half, they didn't get going at all. And also remember, they a team that conceded very little. I think they were one of the most tightest defences in the whole league, if I remember rightly. So to let in four goals, for them was quite a poor day at the office for them, really. So I'm balancing out the fact of this with what they did right to give them the 7 out of 10. As regards Kit, really, I feel I should mark him really low because, and that sounds horrible, because there was questions about his starting 11, there were questions about his tactics, there were definitely questions about his substitutions, and I think that it was the players that won it yesterday more than Kit. I don't think Kit got it right necessarily, but it just worked out. So I find it hard to give him more than a 5 out of 10, really. And for me, I feel I'm being generous to give him a 5 because I think there's so much wrong with what he did. Because he was outfoxed again, you know. They made changes. They were very proactive. He wasn't. He wasn't at all. I want to see some dynamism. I can't say that one either. Still haven't got my teeth in. But you know what I mean. I want to see something dynamic from him. That's what I'm trying to say. And if he'd have made all three substitutions in a game where we needed to win, and even if it hadn't come off, I would give him credit for that. But it wasn't. And he's too cautious in his approach and things. And I was very disappointed that Patrick Roberts didn't get a run out. And I know Patrick Roberts was, and I know his parents were as well. And there wasn't 3-1 the opportunity to do that. It didn't happen. So, yeah, 5 out of 10 for Kit. And I actually feel I'm being quite generous there. So, anyway, back to you, Russ.
Okay, listen, guys, thank you for helping me out at the end and having some issues at home. And you know, you probably can understand some things going on, but thank you guys for saving the show at the very end. I really appreciate it. Real quick, man of the match, David?
Yeah, Russ McCormack, most certainly.
Okay. Over to you, Mike.
Russ McCormack, without a doubt.
Russ McCormack. Okay, I'm just going to read some of the comments from the Fulham supporters. Just going to read because everyone basically said Russ McCormack. Colin Forknall, Russ McCormack. Giannis, Ross. Joanne, FFC, Rayworth, Ross, Jamie Vade, Ross, Harriet Oglethorpe, definitely Ross McCormack, Tom and Araman, unanimously Ross, it's all Ross, except for Matt Kirk said Felix Fregone. Was Felix at the match, David?
I don't think so, but you never know.
Okay, and finally Marty Ward, the streaker. Oh, wait, that was last week. I'm going to have to say Ross McCormack. That's a great way to end the show. Well, listen, guys, we're just about at the end of the show. I want to thank you both for really a truly great show. You guys were both fantastic. Mike, excellent as always. Thank you so much, my friend.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. And David, although we disagree, thank you so much, and I appreciate your commentary.
All right. David, as always.
I'm glad. Sorry, Russ. Thanks for the opportunity to do the show, and I look forward to the ones next weekend. And, Mike, thanks for listening to my side of it, even if we didn't agree. It was a great show, I think.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And, again, guys, thank you so much for helping me out at the very end of the show. I really appreciate it. You guys really pulled off the save there. Mike, just like you did last week, you and Giannis for Emilio. So I appreciate you guys doing the same for me. Okay, well, it's time to wrap up the show. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys. Great show.
Cheers.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers, Mike. See you later.
Now advisor.